True Crime Today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead, and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to today's edition of the program, recording this here on December 7th of 2022 in the afternoon, to give you an update on what is going on with the case, what has transpired over the last 24 hours or so. And the answer to that, not a ton in terms of the case evolving, is information being released to the public, but certainly we're seeing a side of things that we hadn't really seen before. I'm talking about the police chief, James Frye, speaking out. We'll be talking about that in a few moments and hearing some of the things that he had to say as they moved some of the belongings of the students out of the home, things that were not involved in the active investigation and getting them back to the families. My name is Tony Brewski. Sean Reed is with us. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any episodes of this show as we put them out, giving you updates and special reports, breaking news updates as we get them. Sean, how are you today?
I'm good. Yeah. Really interested to see more of the human side of people that are investigating this, starting with the chief of police, Moscow PD. He's dad. And he really opened up a side that we have not yet seen.
We've been very, and I think rightfully so, I think everyone, a lot of people have been fairly critical of the police because there has been a lot of misstatements. There's been a lot of confusing statements. There's been a lot that makes you just scratch your head going, what is going on here? Do they have this handled? And understandably so. I mean, including Mr. Gonzalez, Kaylee's father, very, you know, upset, hiring his own private investigators, going that far. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. First, I want to start out with some audio. The police chief, James Frye, talking about what happened at the home where the four college students' lives met that tragic end now as we go on almost 1 month ago.
Me and my command team and other individuals will be going in to box up personal belongings of the people that live there. And we're going to be getting that, those items back to the families. It's time for us to get those things back that really mean something to those families and hopefully to help with some of their healing.
Why do you personally want to be involved in collecting these possessions?
Well, we have a lot of investigators investigating. And, you know, I'm not tied into the investigation side of it where I'm physically interviewing people. And it's important to me. It's important for us as a department to go in and take care of the families and get the items for them so that they can have some of those back and some of those memories back that are fond memories. And, you know, I'm a dad. I understand. I understand the, you know, the meaning behind some of those things. It may be something that, you know, we gave one of our children or something, and we're just trying to bring some of that healing.
And this afternoon, we saw video footage of that going on. Brian Enten of News Nation even asked, can you give us any sort of updates on the current state of the investigation? And he said he had not been into the office that day. His focus, or today, his focus has been out there helping with getting these items recovered off of the scene. He was asked what stage the investigation was at last night, and this is what he had to say.
We're at that point in the investigation where we're still gathering information. We're still gathering tips. We're still gathering evidence. We're still doing everything we need to do. But there also comes a point in time when the family needs to have those belongings back, the ones that we can get them back. They've asked for some of those things back. So we're ready to take care of that for them.
So that's where that is at right now. We saw some of those boxes coming out this afternoon from the home itself. It is nice to hear a human angle on this and not just a statement that comes out that many pick apart and is easy to pick apart and look at and go, this doesn't make sense. This contradicting this here. Frustration obviously growing at the University of Idaho campus as this case continues on, not only from the public's view, but obviously from the parents of Kaylee Gonsalves and the other parents as well. Today we hear a candid update from police. This is captured by Fox News' Alexis McAdams speaking with the Moscow, Idaho police chief James Fry as he tries to relay his personal dedication and restore confidence to finding the murders in this horrific quadruple homicide.
This case is not going cold. We have tips coming in. We have investigators out every day interviewing people. We're still reviewing evidence. We're still looking at all aspects of this. And I said early on that no stone will go unturned. And I mean that. We are going to continue. This case is not going cold.
And you really could see the emotion in his face, in his voice. You could hear it as well. Almost at one point, breaking down into tears, talking about his personal relation and emotional connection to the murders.
I'm a dad with daughters, and that's tough. You know, you don't. We're human. We don't go to these and just turn it off. It affects us, but we have a job to do, and we're going to continue to do that job. We're going to continue to push forward.
So that's some of the audio that we've heard. We've heard quite a bit from Mr. Fry in the last 24 hours, really kind of becoming the face. I mean, he is the chief of police, but really becoming more of a vocal point in all of this, I think, as everyone's been saying, we need to hear from you more. And I think that's part of the job of the police. It's not just doing the investigation, but if you're serving a community, you also need to be that anchor. You need to be that dad, if you will, saying, you know what, we are doing everything we can. And I think they're finally getting out there in front of this and doing some of that. Your thoughts?
You have a police department of under 40 lead investigators on a quadruple homicide. So the clarity, the contradictions, and the lack of information, my thoughts are, is this truly genuine and authentic? Police Chief Fry just being honest and being a dad and being human? Or is this a tactic of, we don't have a lot of information to report, we need to withhold X amount of information we do have that the public doesn't know to keep the integrity of the investigation? But there is an ongoing request. Everybody is becoming a bit more impatient. You need to tell us something. So is this a stall tactic? I'm not insinuating that he's being fake and that he's not really a dad, but is this a, you don't often see police chiefs when they are trying to catch a killer having a heart to heart. Well, I'm a dad too. I appreciate it. It's genuine and it's authentic, but is it just something to kick the can down the road and to make everyone a little bit more patient and allow time before there's more concrete details?
I don't know. I mean, clearly you could see and hear it in his voice. I think he's trying to be as human as he possibly can, but I think that's a fair question to ask. There obviously was some, you know, hope there. He sounded like he had, you know, something going on. At least he was trying to insinuate that this is very much a very active investigation, that they are getting a lot of information, but at the same point, not really revealing a whole lot.
What's also interesting is talking about personal items and giving back to the families. This is so interesting and unique because, again, we are not accustomed to, again, whether we're watching something made for TV or real life, we're not accustomed to something approaching a month without somebody arrested, without somebody in custody. So obviously, because there isn't that to focus our attention to, you think of any other investigation, a manhunt is underway, a university campus is on lockdown, a town is on lockdown, there's a hostage negotiator. All of this usually plays out within the first 48 hours. Then our attention focuses on first leading the news tonight, XYZ arraignment or trial date, and all of our focus goes on to the trial. So all of the location and residence where the crime actually was committed, we're not paying attention to that. We don't know the timeline of how long a crime scene is active, but we now do, and we are now seeing this. So this happens across every department across the country, that these brave men and women that are protecting us has to have the heartfelt communication with parents of lost loved ones. Here is their personal belongings. But this is the first opportunity for many of us to see this in real time, because we aren't looking at a trial or what attorneys are representing the suspect or suspects, because we don't have that information yet.
No, we really don't. And some of the information, there's been a lot of the most vocal of everybody really has been the Gonzalez parents and sister speaking out about the case itself. They had expressed some concerns about people being cleared a little bit too fast. The police, Fry, did respond to that when speaking with Fox News Digital just yesterday. He said, "We always have the option of re-interviewing." And we've been saying that from the start. Just because someone is cleared, they can be called back to speak with investigators again if evidence supports it. And that has actually been happening. He goes on to say, "We've actually re-interviewed people two or three times because we get tips, we get information that we need to verify again, and sometimes we need to ask the questions just a little bit different to ensure we're getting the proper information to continue on with this investigation." So that all happens regularly in all investigations. And with that being said, I mean, it's encouraging, but still, being a grieving father, I think I'd be doing the same thing. Steve Gonzalez is looking at getting private investigators onto this to get more information out. He said yesterday, "There are things that we can request and things we can do to get to the truth faster. You have to fill out forms to get this evidence released to you. I don't know how to do that." So he has people that are looking into actually diving in and getting information beyond what the police are releasing. We'll see how far that gets or that goes, or if it does end up leading to some turns in this case that we're not hearing about yet from law enforcement.
You talk about that, and he hasn't officially, to my knowledge, as we record this here, started his own investigation.
Oh, he has. He's already hired people.
With that, is that, or will that turn into being guilty of committing a crime, whether it's tampering with an ongoing investigation or
not
evidence?
No.
Or?
No, not at all. No, it's just a private investigator. They're not going in and tampering with evidence or anything of that nature. It's someone that's getting their eyes and ears on the ground, talking to people, interviewing people the same way that police investigators are doing it, but maybe doing it in a different way. Another set of eyes and ears asking some of those same questions. Again, maybe asking them in different ways or asking questions that have not been asked yet.
Another interesting question is, Moscow PD is serving as lead investigators on this case. They are working with the Idaho State Police as well as FBI. Is there any ceiling that is hit with a smaller department leading the investigation, opposed to FBI takes lead on this, or the state level takes lead on this, and the local police department serves in a support role?
I think it really kind of depends on the case, and I think that's something where they have to figure that out amongst themselves. I don't know what the protocol is, if there's, okay, we're at this juncture, you know, state authorities take over, federal authorities take over, if the local even has a choice in the matter, if the local can say, nope, we're not giving this over to anybody, or if the state comes in at some point or the federal investigators come in and say, yes, you are stepping away, or you're going to be going to this different type of role because we're taking this over. One would assume that a month in, they've gotten down the roles of who's doing what by now. So when the made-for-TV Netflix series eventually comes out, you know, which is sick to think about, but I mean, come on, this is how it always seems to work with things, horrible things, that is not something everyone's looking at going, oh my gosh, this was a total cluster. Let's hope that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes in some sort of order that does make sense.
And at this point, whatever comes of it in a made for TV special, that is years down the road. Everybody's focus is on putting an end to this search. Yep. And again, as we talk about on every episode, the grieving can only begin once this killer is found, And you just have to continue to pass along thoughts and prayers and strength to family members of these victims.
Yeah, all you can do is you know, just really hope and pray that they're able to find something here, because I can't imagine, I can't imagine they're sleeping. I can't imagine they're sleeping well at all. I can't imagine, you know, anything's normal for anybody. And you're a month in. It's just this horrible nightmare that every single day when you do wake up from the little bit of sleep that you have, you're right back there. You're right back in it. Over the weekend at one of the remembrance ceremonies that went on, Madison Mogan's boyfriend, Jake, spoke. There's been a lot of chatter online, people accusing this person, that person. And I think almost everyone who exists in this circle of this case that is publicly known has at one point now been accused of murder online by someone. But this man had been the subject of a couple people saying this or that and everybody making their accusations. I want to play back to you. He spoke about Madison at this ceremony over the weekend. It's the first time I heard this was today. And it's a little bit longer piece, but I think he certainly deserves to be heard. Let's take a listen. This is from Jake, the boyfriend of Madison Mogan, over the weekend.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jake. I was Maddie's boyfriend. I'd like to say thank you, everyone, for being here and just everybody involved in the investigation, helping, and everybody showing the unreal support. And yeah, it's we really appreciate it more than we can show right now. So I was Maddie's boyfriend, and she brought me closer to Xana and Kaylee. I knew Xana actually before Maddie, and I met Kaylee through Maddie, and I just, like, they always were amazing to be around. Just Xana was always so energetic and happy and just a beautiful soul, and Kaylee was always so strong and driven and just kind and really genuinely cared about everyone. I didn't get the opportunity to meet Ethan too many times, but from what I had heard from Maddie and all the other roommates, he was also a really great guy, and just none of these people deserve this. So I met Maddie her freshman year of college. We went to high school together, but I was a couple years older and didn't really get to meet her until she came to University of Idaho, and she got in to the Pi Phi house, and I had multiple friends in there, and they just really took Maddie under their wing, and just took her under their wing and were showing, like, introducing them to everybody, and just were always there for her. She was always surrounded by a good group. But yeah, so I met her actually on her bid day of her freshman year. I don't necessarily think she was supposed to go out that night, but luckily she did, and I got to meet her that night. There were times throughout the that school year where we got to hang out and just kind of, I got to get to know her a little bit, but I didn't really realize that I was in love with Maddie until the summer of 2020. We went to McCall, and I got a boat that summer, and we got to spend a lot of time on the water. We floated the river and just hung out every chance we got. And then when we went back to school, I lived in an apartment, and I would just always invite over the Pi Phi girls to get an opportunity to hang out with Maddie. We didn't go on our first date until Valentine's Day that next school year, and we went to the breakfast club in Moscow, but we didn't officially start dating until April 27th that year. Maddie was a perfectionist. A good story with that would be Kaylee and Maddie's birthdays. They were like a month apart, and Maddie's came first, and she would always get frustrated because Kaylee would always go all out and just make everything perfect for her, and it was like almost like a little competition between the two who could make their birthdays better. And I guess it was a repeating thing throughout the years of them knowing each other. Maddie was the best at spreading love to all of those that were close to her. Every time I talked to her on the phone, she would end the conversation with "I love you," and I would always say it back. She was always smiling and dancing and laughing, and she was really observant of things. She would point things out that she thought were cute, which was something usually pink or tiny. She always loved being comfy. Like if we're watching a movie or a football game or anything, she's got her comfy socks on, blanket, and was just always making the best of every situation. She was nice, she was funny, she was confident. She knew that she was, she knew her worth. I had to work for her. It was worth it. Just so confident. She knew that she was beautiful inside and out, but she was also humble about it. When she asked, she was the type of person that when she asked you how your day was, it was genuine. She really wanted to know. Like, when I would talk to her, she could tell me about all of her friends and what they were up to. She was just always aware of everything. She was also, she was really funny. All her jokes really would come out of nowhere, and you'd have to do like a double take. Just be like, was that the cute little blonde girl that just said that? She would always express her love to everybody with words and hugs. She's a really good hugger. She was always someone for her friends, her family, me, and just really anybody that needed advice or a shoulder to cry on, or a person to hug. Maddie was the go-to for that. She always loved like the whole process of like in Moscow, just getting ready with all of her friends. She would be helping all of them do the makeup, and I'd just be sitting on the bed observing all these girls going, doing what they do. So Maddie was my best friend. She was the first person I talked to every morning and the last person I talked to before bed. But I was lucky enough to be able to explore life with Maddie for about 2 years. She was the one who knew me best, and she saw me at my highs and my lows. just helped me through everything. She was always there for me, pushing me to be better and to spread positivity. I think that's what she wanted. And she was the person that I loved the most, and she loved me the most too. And I know she would want us to be strong and be as positive and happy as we can through this time, and just know that we have her watching over all of us. And I know she's in heaven, and I can't wait to see her again and just give her a big hug. That's all I got.
So one obviously cannot help by being moved by listening to that young man's words. And when people jump out there onto these forums and such online, and we have one too with this on Facebook, just, you know, search the University of Idaho Murders podcast. When people are throwing names out, this or that, take a look at the human side of these people. And can you, I can't imagine, number one, going through what he's going through, but then to hear people, you know, throw whatever theories, we think this person did it. We think, well, can we be a little bit more, I don't know, factual, calculated, a little more kind when we're throwing ideas out there, and at least have it have some semblance to reality, because this is clearly a grieving boyfriend that totally speaking from his heart at this service this last weekend.
To show some tact, to be humane, we all too often run with our theories and our emotions, and we just put them out there.
And it's good to ask questions. It is good to ask questions, but yes, the tact part is what's missing. It just feels like when somebody is not someone you immediately know, and I think we've lost this in society with social media over the last many years, it's the whole, like people treat celebrities sometimes very harshly, just say horrible, horrible things to them as if they don't have feelings, they don't have emotions. And in a way, I think sometimes people look at victims and the relatives and those surrounding people who experienced a tragedy, because now all these people are suddenly in the spotlight. We can say whatever we want about them, or we can assume this or that. No, you can't. These are human beings that you know, have gone through a horrific trauma. They lost the most important people in their worlds to them. The idea of we're going to say this or that, I don't know. I know there's obviously some areas where it does make sense, and there's other areas where I swear some of these theories I'm reading are just utterly insane. It's like, are you paying remotely amounts of attention, or are you just throwing darts at a board and playing Mad Libs with people's names and lives?
The amount of courage that this young gentleman showed and what we just heard, if you think to yourself, it could be right now. You could have your high school sweetheart as your current significant other. For others, you think back to that first real relationship. It could have been in high school. For many of us, it could be in college. And you have a fella who is trying to digest a shit ton of emotion. I mean, you find a girl, you hear the words and the emotion of how simplistic the relationship between the two. And then she is murdered.
Yeah.
You then, for some of us as grown adults, we couldn't come up with words as so seamless as Jake talked about his feelings. There are grown men. On some days, it's me that can't properly speak about the feelings I currently have inside of me. And then you think on the magnitude that not only are you so eloquent in being able to talk about the feelings and to talk about Madison, but on the other side, you have millions of people on the internet that are accusing you of killing four people.
Yeah, including the person that you love. So very heartfelt words from him. And I think that's important. Is really everybody kind of grasping the human side of all of this? We've seen a lot of anger. We've seen a lot of outrage, and all rightfully, very much so. And as some of the dust kind of starts to settle on some of this, although it does feel very much in the air because we don't have any answers, we're starting to see, you know, the people behind these names that we've been hearing about in the last couple of weeks. Something that was asked about and has been some speculation with the focus on the fraternity house. There was some questioning there, the Sigma Chi house, as police focus. As of yesterday, they were really trying to focus on the timeline between 9 p.m. on November 12th and 1:45 a.m. On November 13th, where Ethan and Zanna were believed to be at the Sigma Chi house. Brian Anton of News Nation got a chance to talk to one of the members of that fraternity and that house, and asked about cameras on the property. Here's what we heard.
As of right now, we've told Moscow PD, Idaho State Police, and the FBI all we know. We're kind of leaving it up to them to piece it together. Obviously, we don't have the utilities or resources to do it on our own, so we're just putting full faith in the officers and in the detectives doing it. But that's all I really know right now.
So no active cameras on that home seems to be the answer. So nothing to find there as they continue to dig through all of this. That's what we got for you today on the program. Now, thank you guys for listening and following along. We appreciate it. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any updates on the case as we get them. We try to break them to you with special reports and then, of course, our long form episodes every day as we discuss what we know, what's coming out. This has been a production of True Crime Today, or their podcast. You can search for that and download wherever you get podcasts. Get more on this case, as well as other true crime cases all over the world. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to 4 Killed for What?